essentially, you know, one of the main problems or challenges in the past has been the focus on one or the other. And one thing that we're really looking at at C4 and many other organizations are doing so as well is looking at integrating how you can look at conservation and development and people's livelihoods as a single theme, if you like. So balancing the trade-offs between the two and integrating conservation and development at the landscape scale.
What are some of the challenges of the integration process?
I guess one of the main challenges is that everything operates at multiple scales. You know, it's all very well approaching local people and talking to them about, you know, how they can serve and manage their environment. But then you've got government overlapping claims on a particular landscape. You have regional claims on a particular landscape, and you have multinational claims on a particular landscape. So, you know, it's like peeling back an onion. Every single area of the tropics has numerous sort of land claims on it, and those that suffer most are those with the least power. The biggest challenge is basically integrating the needs and hopes and aspirations of all the stakeholders, you know, from local small-scale farmers who produce food for local and regional consumption, but also the national and the regional needs, looking at economic development and the promotion of national economic needs over conservation of the environment.
You spent many years in Central Africa, and so you know what some of the farmers there are dealing with, especially in light of climate change with the extreme droughts and flooding. So what are some of the things that African farmers can do to protect their land?
Well, African farmers, to an extent, do protect their land. I mean, small-scale farmers do tend to practice, you know, we consider very low impact agriculture. It's the larger expansion of agricultural crops, particularly oil palm, biofuels, which are the main contributors to both deforestation and land degradation. So in terms of small-scale impacts, local people tend to have much more conservation-oriented goals in the long term if they're guaranteed of tenure. And tenure is a fundamental, I should say, contributor, if you like, to what people do on the land. If you have access rights and long-term resource rights to your land, you'll invest in protecting it. If you don't, then people tend to invest more in destructive practices.
Looking ahead, what role do you see biodiversity playing in the future of food security?
Biodiversity contributes to food security on so many levels. I mean, we are now dependent only on 20 crops for our food security. Any one time, it's estimated that over 7,000 individual plant species contribute towards human food security. And 95% of the food consumed is only focused on 20 species. And three of those, rice, wheat, and maize, contribute to more than 50% of global food consumption. So by narrowing our genetic base, if you like, in terms of foodstuffs, we are exposing ourselves to enormous risks, and particularly with climate change. You know, we've seen the impacts of the drought on the corn production in the U.S., which is having a knock-on effect both in terms of food prices but also food supply globally. And so widening our resource base to include other crops, I mean, we can see in many forested environments, people using a much more wider range, if you like, of plant resources to their diets, which gives them both nutritional diversity, but also provides a resilience to vicissitudes in climate and other shocks. So it's incredibly important to bring biodiversity into the equation, but also agrobiodiversity in terms of land races of the agricultural crops we are producing now is incredibly important. They provide genetic resilience, if you like, for future pests and disease, and provide new sources of genes which are brought into production systems. It's very important to maintain and conserve the agrobiodiversity as much as the wider biodiversity concerned as well.